We got some very interesting audio to play for you from the trial of Chad Daybell. We're going to hear from a doctor discussing the autopsy photos of JJ and his observations. Also, a weird twist in how a Burger King ends up as being a piece of evidence, because this is a case you can't make shit up on. In an emotionally charged day 19 of the Chad Daybell murder trial, the courtroom was presented with harrowing details of JJ Vallo's autopsy, which painted a grim picture of the young boy's last moments. Dr. Garth Warren, a medical examiner, provided testimony that left many in the courtroom, including members of the jury, very distressed. Dr. Warren's testimony focused on the cause of JJ's death, which he confirmed as asphyxia caused by a plastic bag secured over the head and duct tape covering the mouth.
Wow.
So just think of that for a second. This is a little kid who's with people that he trusts. Whoever did this, whether it was Chad, whether it was Alex, whether it was Lori, I mean, a human being had to make the decision to grab a plastic bag and put it over the head of either their own child, their stepchild, or their nephew, depending on who did this. All in the name of,
you know, as you're watching that struggle to not,
oh my God,
have a moment of clarity and say, this is not okay.
And Chad, as we know, was starting to tell people that JJ is going to die, that he doesn't have a whole lot of time left. He was prophesizing this to several people. We heard testimony just the other day. Was it Zulema who was? I think it was Zulema who was talking about it.
Yeah.
Did we play that yesterday?
We did. Yeah. She was talking that, you know, his time is limited here on Earth.
Let's revisit that quickly before we get into that, because this is just so disturbing. This is Zulema. This is one of the good friends of Chad and Lori, who I think still believes her shit because on the stand, they asked her because Chad told her that she could control the weather. And on the stand, they asked her just the other day, do you still believe you can control the weather? And her answer wasn't an immediate, oh, my God, hell no. Like that was back then. I was not thinking right. She took a moment and thought about it before she answered no. She had to think if she really could control the weather or not.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is her talking about Chad prophesizing about the death and the resurrection through rebirth of Chad. Let's take a listen to this.
During this meeting, Chad said that JJ was going to die young, that he was probably going to die soon, and that he was going to come right back to Earth as Colby's son.
Yeah.
And who is Colby?
Lori's son.
So what a way to manipulate all the people around you. I didn't think we did not play that one yesterday. This is new. I mean, what a way to manipulate the people that are already believing everything you're saying is, and to justify murder. He's dark. He's possessed. We have to rid him of the world, and he's going to come back as Colby's son. So no worries, everybody. He's going to be reincarnated. It's all good. This is from Chad Daybell as he tries to paint the picture that Lori was the mastermind in all of this. I think Lori honestly was more of a pawn, and Chad was turned into kind of a wild, insane madman that suddenly had power when he never did before and was literally manipulating these people all for money, for sex, number one, for money and power. And he certainly found it with these idiots.
Ugh, God, what a clusterfuck these people are. All of them.
No, completely. Like, there's like, I wonder what other dumb shit Zulema will get into within her life that will completely destroy it or other people's lives. Dr. Warren's testimony focused, like I said, on the cause of JJ's death, talking about, God, that's just a horrific thing. The abrasions could have been from someone putting a bag over JJ's head or JJ trying to get the bag off his head, Dr. Warren explained, suggesting a desperate struggle. Throughout the morning, jurors were shown a series of unsettling photos detailing the condition of JJ's body. When found, they included images of his bound wrists and ankles with duct tape, bruises and scratch-like abrasions on his arm, neck, and ears, and his face after the removal of the duct tape. The photo showed significant signs of physical struggle and restraint, contributing to a somber atmosphere in the courtroom. One that I hope is somber enough for the jurors to decide, yes, we need to put Chad Daybell to death. Let's take a listen to that testimony.
And what did you observe in 176E?
So this is a photograph, more of a close-up of the upper body. Again, showing the plastic, the white plastic bag better. You can see there is a tear near the top of the head in the white plastic bag. So I was informed before I did the autopsy that law enforcement, when they found what they believed to be JJ, they made that small tear to confirm that there was human hair and that there was a human body in the bag. So to my knowledge, that's where that tear came from. But this just better shows the plastic bag over the head and the duct tape covering the face.
And 176F.
And this is a photograph closer up of the lower half of the body. And you can see the blue and white blanket, the portion of the red pajama pants, black socks. And then you can also see that JJ's ankles are bound with duct tape as well.
Doctor, what did you observe in 176G?
This is another photograph with the blanket a little down further, so you can get a little better look at the pajama top. And I think the main thing here is you can see there's the pajama top was soaked with decomposition fluid, and there was mold on the shirt. And then you can see also there's a fair amount of dirt and other debris on the duct tape around the face.
176H.
This is a very similar photograph, just with the blanket removed. Better seeing the forearms and hands that are duct taped together, and also just getting a view on the a different side of the body.
When these photographs are taken, do they attempt to take multiple angles?
That's correct.
Why is that?
Just so we get the full picture. We have a routine where we take photographs on both sides of the body, the front of the body, the back of the body, just to make sure that we're capturing all angles of the body.
Doctor, what did you observe in 176I?
Again, this is a photograph of the blanket removed, better showing the pajama pants, which were also partially soaked or soaked with decomposition fluid. And you can see there's some white moldy substance on the near the right knee or the right thigh.
And 176J.
This is a photograph better showing the ankles that were bound with duct tape.
If you're wondering how this played out with the jury, several jurors were crying. Others looked away from the images. It was very, very emotional. Chad Daybell, the accused, as he always does, remains stone-faced because he has no soul. I really feel, I mean, this man has no empathy. There is something seriously wrong with him to remain stone-faced during this.
There's no other explanation, Tony.
No. Malignant narcissist. And if it doesn't benefit him, he doesn't care. Occasionally shaking his head at the photographs that were displayed on the monitor at his table. The courtroom setting was tense, with the prosecution methodically presenting evidence linking Daybell to the alleged crimes against JJ and his sister, Tylee Ryan, whose remains were also discussed in a revealing session on day 19 in the Lori Vallow trial. Chandler Police Detective Ariel Weather took the stand to dissect the intricate web of cell phone data and movements on the day Charles Vallow was fatally shot. The courtroom then filled with the key family members, including Lori's uncle and Charles' relatives, were presented with minute-by-minute breakdown of the events that led to the tragedy. Later in the day, using advanced data analysis tools, Detective Weather laid out a timeline that meticulously tracked the locations and communications between Lori Vallow, her brother Alex Cox, and Chad Daybell. At the heart of the testimony was a series of early morning phone calls and texts that painted a detailed picture of the hours before Charles Vallow's death. At 7:33 a.m., just hours before the fatal incident, Charles' device, which was later found with Lori, sent a text to her phone. By 7:52 a.m., Lori was actively communicating with Alex Cox. His communications continued right up until the 911 call that was made at 8:36 a.m., highlighting a crucial window that raised questions about the sequence of events that unfolded that morning.
This was GPS location data extracted from Charles Vallow's phone, and this represented that at about 7:50 in the morning, the device left the area of the Four Peaks address that we've been discussing. I had mentioned that that's about 18 minutes after the device arrived and about 46 minutes before the call would be made to 911.
And I think we talked about it, but I believe Lori had indicated she had Charles' phone with her.
That is what she had claimed, yes.
And if we go to the next slide,
okay,
what are we seeing on this slide?
This slide is representing, these are those H planes we had discussed before, indicating where a device most likely was at the time an event happened. This event is actually a call that should have stayed up. This is a call made between Alex and Lori, between Alex's device and Lori's device, rather. And shows that at 7:52, the auto advance is going to keep doing that. At 7:52, you can see the devices are communicating, and it shows the most likely location where those two devices were at that point.
So Lori and Alex's device were communicating?
Correct. That was a voice call at 7:52 between the two. Recall the claim had been made that after the shooting, that Alex and Lori communicated via phone. And this is one of a few instances I found where there was a voice call between their devices.
And that was before the 911 call?
Before the 911 call. We've not got to the 911 call yet.
And then what are we seeing here?
These would be those overlapping H planes. So the blue represents the most likely area for Ms. Vallow's device to have been. And the green is the most likely area for Alex Cox's device to have been. The green, of course, includes the Four Peaks address, and the blue includes the Burger King we're going to talk about momentarily.
All right. And if we go forward?
Yes.
And what are we seeing here?
This is location data derived from Charles Vallow's device, which shows that at about 7:55, it was in the area of that Burger King on Ocotillo Road that we previously highlighted.
And if we go forward, what is this slide telling us?
This is my way of... We talked about wanting to corroborate data and then or refute the data if it turns out to be the case that the data isn't reliable, and also to test the various claims. So if it is true that Lori Vallow was in possession of Charles Vallow's phone at this point, then that location data in the Burger King parking lot area would also be representative of where Ms. Vallow likely was. That would show the data set were apparently reliable, and it would also show that Ms. Vallow appeared to have the phone. So to test those claims, we look for that evidence. And one of the things I did in order to look for that evidence is go to that Burger King to view that video and see if, in fact, we saw Ms. Vallow.
And did you, in fact, do that?
Yes.
And if we move forward, then what are we going to see in these next slides?
So these will be three different video clips recovered from the Burger King location. I went there and I viewed them in person, and then they were later provided by the Burger King security personnel. You see the timestamp of 7:54. One of the things I do and that I did in this case is while I was at the Burger King, I checked what their video system time thought the time was, and I checked that against my work cell phone, which I know to be reliable. And it showed that their timestamps appeared to be accurate. So this 7:54 is roughly accurate to the time.
And is this particular vehicle one associated with Lori Vallow?
It is. I personally observed this vehicle not the day of the shooting, but the next day. This red Kia Sorento with this particular Colorado plate that you see up on the screen. I went to the Four Peaks address on the 12th and I saw that vehicle. And just for reference, I've enlarged the area where the plate is to show that it seems to be generally consistent with those characters.
At Burger King, we're excited to let you know that we're the official restaurant of sadistic killers. If you're narcissistic and like to kill your children, we've got a meal for you. Whether it be chicken fries, croissant sandwiches, or the classic Have It Your Way Whopper. Whether it be Adam Montgomery getting a little breakfast while the child dies in the background, or the Daybells. You can have it your way at Burger King like never before. Burger King, the number one restaurant with sadistic killers. There's been a lot of Burger King murder stories.
Hold on, dude. Yeah. Let me step in for just a second.
Yeah.
I am a huge Burger King fan.
You are?
There is nothing.
Why?
Yes, there is nothing better than one of those. What do they call it? Flame broiled. Oh my God. Put that in front of me right now. I would devour it like a starving animal.
You didn't get burned
I said
out
too much.
You didn't get burned out on Burger King when it was in the parking lot of our radio station many years ago.
I did not. As soon as they fired up that damn grill, mm-hmm. I was there. It was just like I was hypnotized. And you know, Burger King's, they release that smoke just to piss you off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it triggered me every time. I have an incredible sense of smell. And the minute I'd smell that, I'd go, oh, Whopper.
I do enjoy their croissant sandwiches. Those are pretty good. But I swear to God, the shady Burger King that was there, every time I'd go over there to like get like a big soda or something, it tasted flame grilled. Like the Coke tasted flame grilled. Like the ice, there was so much grease in that fucking building that your drink literally had a smoked taste to it. It was bizarre. Anyway, I digress.
See, I loved it. Every time Burger King with the Montgomery story, I would get so pissed. I'm like, this is so not fair. And now here it is with Daybell. Come on.
There you go. The jury was shown animations based on GPS data that tracked Lori's movements, including stops at Burger King and Walgreens, where she was seen purchasing flip-flops. Mundane details that took a sinister overtone given the context of the day's events. The data does not lie, Weathers stated, as he presented slides that show the geographical positions of the involved parties' cell phones. These positions corroborated the prosecution's timeline, which suggests that Lori had possession of Charles' phone during key moments of the morning. The forensic presentation was not just a technical showcase, but a narrative device linking digital traces to human actions. The detailed mapping of phone calls and locations helped illustrate the premeditated sequence of events, according to the prosecution. Family members looked on, and while this was going on, the weight of the digital evidence, very palpable. And those cell phone records not only trace Lori's steps, but also seem to isolate her actions in relation to the timing of her husband's death. Going to Burger King, getting some flip-flops because, hey, we're going to go out, party, the beach, do whatever the hell they're going to do. It's psychotic. I mean, it's just psychotic behavior.
The flip-flops really bother me. Who goes to Walgreens to buy flip-flops? I mean, I guess if you're like on vacation somewhere and you forgot your shoes and like Walgreens is open 24/7 kind of thing and you see them and go, yeah, I need those because the shower I have to be in is disgusting or whatever. Yep. But to me, that's just a weird, I just killed somebody and I need some flip-flops. God damn it, you know?
Really? You're completely right. That's like the only reason you'd buy flip-flops from Walgreens. I need some, I need them for the pool right now and I don't have any. And and even then you question your judgment. Like, why didn't I just go to Target or something? Went to, to Walgreens. But hey, you know, Lori wasn't exactly known for making good decisions, including her flip-flop choices as well. Disturbing testimony as this case continues, more and more damning against Chad Daybell. And I'm sure we will continue to hear more. John Pryor, he's got his work cut out for him.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.